The county's number one talk show, the 9 till noon show on Highland Radio.
And you're very welcome to the 9 till noon show this morning. Donal Kavanagh with you on the show until 12 noon today. It is a Thursday, but we're going to have our Friday panel this morning because there's no 9 till noon show tomorrow. Joined by three very formidable people. We'll introduce you to them in just a moment. Don't forget, of course, we want to hear your views and your perspectives on the issues of the day. You can text or WhatsApp us on 086 60 25000. You can call us 074 91 25000 003537491 25000 if you are outside of the dialing area. And Shannon and Donna Marie taking your calls. Donna Marie producing as well this morning. It's going to be a very busy day, and we'll be making somebody very happy a little later on in the programme when we make a phone call and have a draw in studio. More on that anon. We'll also be introducing you to some of the finalists in the Community Hero Initiative, and we'll have Sean in the studio with us to discuss that. All that to come. But as I said, before we do anything else, we will introduce you to our Friday panel this morning. We're joined this morning on Zoom by Letterkenny Councillor and the Fianna Fáil Whip on Donegal County Council, Councillor Kieran Brogan. We're joined by Gráinne Hines, who is a member of Letterkenny Active Retirement, and we're joined by broadcaster and journalist Mary Hart. A very good morning to all of you this morning.
Good morning.
Mary, I'm going to start with you, because obviously over the past week or so, the big story of the day has been the ascendancy of Simon Harris to the leadership of Fine Gael, and he will be officially confirmed as Taoiseach later, not later this month, early next month on Tuesday week, which is April 9th. He was effectively coronated. There was no competition. There was no other challengers to the Fine Gael leadership. They brought it forward a day. He was named on Sunday, and it's all systems go. I mean, when I started in this job back in 1990, the name Hart was absolutely synonymous with Fine Gael in this county, and you obviously would have grown up, given your own family history, you know, very much in at the centre of Fine Gael in Donegal. Is Simon Harris and the Fine Gael of today the same Fine Gael that you would remember from your growing up?
I don't think so, but it's a difficult question to answer. You're correct. My father was a Fine Gael TD for 37 years, and I was 8 when he went into politics. So, I was immersed in, I suppose, the Fine Gael politics. But then I went off and studied politics in university myself, so I deviated in all directions myself. I would look at Simon Harris. I think the quote, I think Fintan O'Toole, Simon Harris has risen without trace, another case of survival of the smoothest. I think that's one of the best descriptions, because to be quite honest, I know absolutely nothing about Simon Harris. And even when I went looking to find something, startling about him, I couldn't find it. So it is not easy. I know my father way down the years when there would have been these huge battles for the leadership of Fine Gael, way back when Gareth Fitzgerald, was challenging Liam Cosgrave, and, when also I think it was Declan Costello was challenging, there was this extreme kind of, split where you had the conservative Fine Gael and you had the more modernist Fitzgerald and the new kind of just society policies and all of that. I can't see any of that in Simon Harris. That's not to say he won't make a good leader or he won't make a good Taoiseach. That's yet to be seen. But I do think Fine Gael would appear to have lost their way, but I don't know what way they were heading. And it's just the sign of politics of today. I think people are not following party trends, but they're absolutely following independence. And that basically to me says people are looking for what they want personally, and not what they see as the best thing for a country as a whole.
It's interesting, he does have the reputation of being the TikTok Taoiseach. He's more in tune with social media than, they say, any other politician in the country. And Oliver Callan reminds us of that mercilessly on every episode of Callan's Cakes. But by the same token, it was interesting that when he spoke at that Fine Gael convention on Sunday last, he was referencing law and order. He seemed to be very much referencing the old standards, referencing the old ideals, and trying to reclaim and go back to basics in terms of values.
Yeah, I think, the way this happened, this is only my own personal kind of, suspicion.
Absolutely, I wouldn't ask you to speak on behalf of anybody.
But I think the, you know, after the referendum, and I absolutely think the Irish people voted because they didn't know what it was about, and they just said, oh, I have no idea what this is about. And it was nothing to do with, I don't like Fine Gael, or I don't like Fianna Fáil, or I don't like Labour. I really do think that's what it was. And, you know, you should give the electorate the intelligence, you know, to be able to make that judgment call. But I think, you know, that Simon Harris, you know, I think what you've just said there, you know, the law and order aspect, I think there was an awful lot of underhand things going on that we don't know about, and that Leo's decision to step out wasn't made one morning. He just woke up and said, no, I'm gone. He has seen this coming down the track. And I think what he has seen coming down the track is, you know, the knives are out from some other wing of the party against him for his liberalism. So, you know, and I think Phil Hogan's involvement in all of this would tell you, you know, I mean, Phil Hogan was very much, you know, part of the older Fine Gael elements. That's my belief. And I think that's what really has happened, that, you know, there was a purge going on in the background, and Leo Varadkar was not going to be ousted. He was going to take the way out, and he was probably going to go anyway. You know, he'd been, I think, but he's young, Simon, you know, I mean, Leo Varadkar. And I think Leo Varadkar was doing a great job, in my view, you know, under difficult circumstances. And, I don't think that Simon Harris is going to lift Fine Gael into some wonderful place.
I have to be honest, I'm not exactly sure that Simon Harris is going to be much different to Leo Varadkar. So if this was a push to try and get someone different at the head of the party, I'm not sure Simon Harris's ascendancy is going to achieve that. Kieran Brogan, I want to turn to you because obviously as a Fianna Fáil councillor, you're not in Fine Gael, but your party is in government with them. So you have an alliance with, we obviously have the pact locally as well, but nationally your two parties are working together. Watching the way things are happening at the moment, what's your take on the ascendancy of Simon Harris? This time 2 weeks, if someone said who'd be Taoiseach on April 9th, you wouldn't have said Simon Harris.
I don't think so, but I suppose they almost say that politics is about timing and judgment, and I suppose this is a great example of that, how things can change very quick. I think it's been a huge journey for Simon Harris himself. He's been in cabinet for some time. He has a lot of cabinet experience, and we all know that the portfolio of health a lot of the time is sometimes can be a pass to the top job, and he's been through that through a difficult time during COVID. Nevertheless, I think there's an awful lot happening for him personally at the moment, and taking over leader of any group or any organisation, let it be a football manager or whatever, bringing people with you is huge to that, and I think having that element of trust will be huge at the beginning, and then having a team around him as well. Hard to know how that's going to fall, and it's not a call for me to make, but I mean, there's a huge amount of work for him to undertake at the minute, and then you have the programme for government that's there now with the two leaders in Micheál Martin, the Taoiseach, and in Eamon Ryan as well. There seems to have been a good level of trust and understanding with the three leaders since the formation of this government, to be fair. So he probably will fit in well to that, the fact that he's been at the cabinet table with them for some time. So I suppose the challenge may be his own party more than the other leaders at this point in time. And I suppose every party wants to put their own stamp in government. But the programme for government is there at the moment, and I suppose that's what they're going to work through.
Does this potentially put Micheál Martin in a stronger position? Because in terms of the public perception, at least, Micheál Martin is now going to be very much regarded as the senior figure in the government. I mean, the wider public is going to look at Micheál Martin perhaps as the person they trust. Simon Harris is the new boy that's going to have to earn it.
Well, I think in fairness to Micheál Martin has excelled over the last number of years, and he seemed to be, in my opinion, and you would say I would say that anyway, but he seems to be somebody that has been, I suppose, described as the elder statesman, doing the right thing by the people at all times. And I think he has come across very well, not just in our own country, but throughout the world as a responsible leader. But I think he'll do the right thing by Simon Harris as well. I think he'll do the right thing by the country, and he'll want to work closely with him, as will Eamon Ryan as well. But I think Mary touched on something a moment ago about how politics has changed. And I think that it's probably become very much about the individual themselves, as opposed to when Paddy Hart would have been there, or people in the past that would have stayed through the rough and tumble of politics, and there was good days and bad days. And I think if you watch closely what has happened, the Fine Gael party over the last number of years, that a lot of people who lost the top jobs have decided just to, for the want of a better word, put the fiddle in the bag and walk away. So there has to be some reason as what's that happening. Is it because, and you know, we heard Kieran Kennan's statement, and everybody heard it, about how politics has changed and the abuse that people are taking in politics. And I suppose that's something that, that people has to look at going forward as well. Is, you know, I don't believe that you're going to have the same long time level of service that you would have had from politics and our ministers going forward. So it's a big task for Simon Harris, but nevertheless, he has had the cabinet experience. He has been up in Letterkenny and in the North West. He's familiar with it. Mm-hmm. He's done very well. He's overseen the, what would have been the IT's to the university status.
And he was there in January,
Seems to have loads of energy. But again, it's back to the team, and it's back to the trust and loyalty around him. And I think if they can, I suppose, continue to build that trust and get the team around him. But the biggest challenge he'll have over the next number of days is deciding who to give the jobs to. And sometimes, getting back to the point I made earlier, it has become too much about who gets a job and who doesn't. And then some of them decide they're not happy because they didn't get a job. They get into destructive mode. So if he can steady the ship at the early stage, I think he'll do fine. But with regards to the party perspective, I do think that he will have, that there'll be a fair level of respect cross-party to want to do the right thing by the country at this time.
Gráinne Hines, as a lobbyist and someone who obviously is fighting a corner for the people you represent in active retirement, but not actively yourself involved in party politics per se, what's your take on this? Is this a matter of meet the new boss, same as the old boss, or do you think there is change afoot?
Well, I think there's a lot of change, and I don't agree really with Mary, who really feels that maybe he isn't up to the job, or he isn't representing the Fine Gael as it really is. I think if I was...
Oh, I didn't say that. I
think in fairness she said she would give him a chance.
Okay, Mary, sorry. If I was interviewing Simon, for example, for the job of Taoiseach, I would be looking, first of all, at his qualifications in politics. He started very young. He was idealistic. He worked very hard. He was ambitious, and he rose to great heights, really, for his age. And I see him as a sort of a bridge between the old and the new Fine Gael. The fact that he is computer savvy is very, very important. And this goes down very well with younger people. And some of the younger people I've spoken to really think he is a good guy. They think he's ambitious. They think he's very... And they have... I think his... I myself am very interested in the education. That was my role. And I'm delighted about the ATUs. I think that has really given a great boost to younger people. They can stay at home. It has helped parents who want to send their children to third level. And I really admire him for his attitude to apprenticeships. I have long, long thought that this is a very important thing for young people. Everybody is not academic. Academics isn't the be-all and end-all of everything. And I think that he's given this to younger people, that there is another way to make a living. There is another way to do what you want to do and what you're skilled at. So I admire him greatly for that. And I saw his passion over the fact that the tricolour was over Mr. Macaulay's coffin. So I know he is a patriot. I know he is a Republican, but a peaceful Republican. So I admire all those things about him. He's dynamic. He's young. I think he would make a very good job. And I think really politics is the art of compromise. And I feel that he is really would be good at that. He's a very nice personality. I met him quite a few years ago, and I spoke to him about the older people, what we want and what we didn't want. And he was attentive. He wasn't looking around the room trying to pass, you know, he's ticked a box. He's talked to the chair of the Age Friendly Alliance. And he was interested. And he really did communicate. He's a very good communicator.
Did anything so practical come of that conversation?
I'm also from a Fine Gael household. And I do think that he will, you know, take up the banner on law and order, on fairness, on justice. And I do have a lot of faith in him.
Do you think this could be the difference between the current government returning to power after the next election in some form, or a Sinn Féin-led government coming into power after the next election? Because the polls at the moment are interesting. We haven't seen a huge jump in the most recent polls following the announcement that Simon Harris was going to take over. But do you think this is going to increase the chances the government has of getting back in? Because, I mean, at the moment, very few people would give the government any chance at all.
Well, I think it'll be a lot to do with the communications, what people understand about the policies of Fine Gael and Sinn Féin. Both have very good policies. They're very good people in both parties. And the people will have to decide who they think will be more efficient at implementing the policies. Political experience is very important in the government. And I think that Simon also gets on very well with other leaders. And I think if Sinn Féin were in and he was... I'm not sure whether they would work together, but I don't see any problem in that. I think that he does think of the good of the country, and he has been very, very active in his policies.
Can I go back to you briefly, Mary Hart, if I may, because one of the interesting things obviously is going to be how he gets on with the First Minister and Deputy First Minister at Stormont, how he gets on with Rishi Sunak and with Chris Heaton-Harris and those involved in Westminster as well. Now, as someone who spent many, many years working with the BBC and someone who knows the Northern Ireland political scene very, very well indeed, how do you think Simon Harris is going to get on as a new Taoiseach in that space? Because we know Leo Varadkar maybe made a few missteps with some of his comments here and there and wasn't perhaps the best loved of Taoiseach, particularly among unionists.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's important to, and I know Gráinne mentioned, you know, experience in politics is extremely important, which it is, you know, but there are those who are born to be very good politicians and those that really are never going to make a great job at it. I do think the comment that Simon Harris was born when Micheál Martin was just elected to the Dáil. So, you know, there's a massive gap in terms of experience there. And I have said, I have looked to see amazing things that he has done, but he has had a meteoric rise. And that could all be down to just being in the right place at the right time. And I know that's how politics works internally and externally. He will be very, very heavily dependent on advisors. And, you know, we all know that the further away from the border, the less knowledgeable you are about the do's and don'ts of Northern Ireland politics and the footwork that has to be done. I do think he'll listen. I think that's the kind of person that he is. And I do think he will make a good shot at negotiating, because at the end of the day, whether, you know, what side of the political divide that you might find yourself on or have decided you're going to be, Sinn Féin are a major player now, both north and south, and they will be. They're not going to go away. And I do think it is important that, you know, everybody works together for the betterment of the country, not for an individual party politics and finding. And I do know, I mean, the days are gone where you have one strong party like Fianna Fáil were in power for almost 40 years, you know, leading government, and, you know, other parties just could never break that mold. Having coalition governments has to be the way forward, and coalition does mean that you're going to have to, you know, give and take both sides. I mean, that's not to say Sinn Féin's going to have its way all the time. And likewise, neither will the parties that they may share power with. And I think Simon Harris going into Northern Ireland is a very, very messy place now, whether we think, yes, there's peace, but there's peace at a price. And that peace has come with an economy that's collapsed entirely. You know, the number of industrialists that would look at Northern Ireland to go and set up a massive computer company, or, you know, you'll never have the Facebooks and the Googles that are in Dublin and Belfast. They just don't look at it that way. And, you know, it's a difficult situation, and Brexit has absolutely pushed it right back. And I think we were moving along nicely as a cross border, you know, from every direction, you know, economically and politically. And then Brexit just tumbled everything down, and it's a big work to bring that north-south cooperation back again.
Kieran Brogan, you'll be very shortly going, oh, you're probably on the campaign train already, let's be honest about it, but I mean, local elections coming up in June, a busy couple of weeks and months for you in terms of trying to get your place back at the council chamber in Lifford. Do you think this is going to make any difference to the forthcoming campaign, or has it come too late to really have any impact on the local campaigning?
Well, just before I get into to answering the question with the local campaign, and Donal, I think it's important. Mary talks about Brexit and how maybe Northern Ireland's somewhat negative. I would have to disagree with her, and far from me to praise a Fine Gael leader or Taoiseach, but you would have to acknowledge that Leo Varadkar, when he was there as Taoiseach, and indeed Simon Coveney as Minister for Foreign Affairs, I think the Irish government's handling of the whole Brexit situation over the last number of years was exceptional. It was top class. And, you know, it would have been a phrase that we all would have used over the years, that people from Dublin or Cork are somewhat disconnected from the northern region and they don't understand it. But I would have to give credit where it's due. The stance that the Irish government has taken and stayed with it throughout the journey through different British prime ministers over the years was the right decision for Ireland as a whole. And I think they were steadfast in that position. And I think the point that's been missed by Brexit is that Northern Ireland economy is actually doing better now than it ever was doing before. The development of the North West City region, which we're part of here in the North West, and the Letterkenny Derry Joint Gateway, of us working very close together in Donegal County Council, Derry and Strabane Council, to, I suppose, bring together the critical mass of the region. The shared island funding, $46 million, that has gone into the Ulster University in McGee, the investment in Elton Galvin Hospital, and now the recently announcement of the A5. And, you know, in fairness to the outgoing Taoiseach Leo Varadkar, and I know that our own Minister, Charlie McConlow, was very much a part of this, but, I mean, when they announced the funding for the A5, it was very much part of the story that evening on the news that it was going to Letterkenny. So for a long time, we may have been forgotten, but we've been front and centre in the North West. And I would have to acknowledge that. And I mean, all the figures will show that the investment in Northern Ireland has increased two or threefold. And I mean, big companies have invested in Belfast and Derry. And we see Fintru, who are now in Letterkenny as well. And they would say, when they carried out the assessment that they done, that the talent is in the North West. And they commend the Derry-Donegal relationship. So I think we're in a much better place than maybe sometimes we give ourselves credit for. And I think a lot of good companies are in the North West. And I think we have an exciting time. And I mean, Northern Ireland now is one of the best places in the world to invest because you have.
I really don't see, Ciarán, where you're getting that information from, because I don't see it. The vast majority of people are civil service jobs, high unemployment, and you look at the Republic, full employment.
Maybe if you'd allow me to finish, Mary, I've attended many as chairman of the Economic Development Strategic Policy Committee in Donegal County Council. I've been at many meetings with business people, not only in Ireland, but I mean another in London and in Boston, and I've listened to the companies firsthand, and they couldn't speak highly enough of the relationship we have and the work we're doing. And I commend people like the ATU and the Ulster University and all the good things that's happening. And all you have to do is talk to the local companies and they'll tell you about this huge success story. So sometimes we beat ourselves up too much. I think we have a good story to tell. And the fact that any company coming now to the region has the advantage of the British market or the European market, that's unequal anywhere. So I think we have an exciting time ahead, and hopefully now with commitment to the A5, and education is definitely a game changer, and it has, in my opinion, has been the game changer in our northern six counties as well. It's how we change things going forward. So I think we need to focus on the opportunities that's available for us, and I think that will bring us a long way.
And maybe the biggest challenge perhaps is to get that to filter right down, because it may very well be that the companies are happy and that certain people are happy, but is that filtering down into the Bogside? Is it filtering down into the Creggan? Is it filtering down into the wider population? Because the experience in the Creggan is not necessarily going to be the same experience of those involved in business and those attending economic development committee meetings.
You just take a look, my view, and I've worked in Northern Ireland for almost 30 years, and, you know, the Republic has moved towards Europe all the time, has depended, and has been a huge player in the European affairs. For that reason, the Republic has rocketed ahead in terms of, I mean, we're second wealthiest per head of population country in Europe. We have full employment at the moment. Now, that doesn't mean to say that those that are on the margins of poverty are not benefiting from that. They're not. But that's another different work that has got to be dealt with, and building more houses has got to be dealt with. But you look at Northern Ireland and you do not see the same vibrancy there. And I know the A5, and I've gone on that road to university through the 70s. I've worked in Dublin. I've come back up and down. It is the worst road, and it is even worse now. And I don't see that A5 will that I, from what I'm told from people who are at the high end of the negotiating from the civil service aspect, they said the amount of people that are now putting legal challenges into that, it's going to delay it by another 10 years. So just because it said it's going to happen, then the people who own the land are not going to let it happen. And that's unfortunately an issue that has been there, is because there was a huge amount of money paid out to when they were developing the road to Enniskillen. And the people then on the value of land has dropped, and as far as they want the same amount of money. And that's the issue. It's the problem with the A5 is people who own the land will not give it up.
Well, hopefully in terms of the A5, we've had a number of public inquiries. We've had a number of courts. I mean, the point presumably will come where the reasons or the justifications for challenges will be addressed and exhausted. And, you know, hopefully we will see movement on the A5 sooner rather than later. Grainne, I want to bring you in here because I'm conscious that you're somewhat on the sidelines, and I don't want that to happen. From the point of view of someone who's observing this debate, and I'm sure, Grainne, you're the sort of person that loves debate like this. What's your take on this issue of the North-South relationship, particularly in the context of a new Taoiseach, and where Simon Harris is going to fit in, and what impact Simon Harris is going to have on cross-border relations?
Well, I think there's a very good situation at the moment in Northern Ireland where we have two ladies at the top, and they seem to be very sensible in their issues and their outlooks. And I am one of the few people who probably, I worked on the Falls Road as a teacher, and I also worked in a Protestant school in Bangor, probably one of the few people who have worked in both areas. And I have a late, I really do think that the people of Northern Ireland are very stoical, and they're very practical and pragmatic. And I found them both, there are so many things they have in common. And I think that's what we really need to look at. And I think the business community in the North is realising how well the South have done, as Mary says, and how we have, through our compromises and our business people, developed our country. And I really feel that the people of the North of Ireland have that power to do the same. And I have great faith in them. Maybe I'm an optimist, but I do feel that there's so much in common between both communities. And I think if that is emphasised and worked on, the worst thing I think ever happened when the Good Friday Agreement was finished, that they didn't insist that all schools were mixed. I have worked in, as I say, in the Protestant Catholic schools, and I felt that was a really basis. I remember talking to a woman who had 6 children. She lived in Bangor. The only grammar school that she could go to was the St. Dominic's in the Falls Road, which was a long bus drive, bus journey, and they really couldn't afford it. She ended up sending her to an intermediate school where the academic achievement was very low and her child was very bright. And now I really felt that all the schools should be, I think that's something if they worked on, where they had the schools, Protestant and Catholics mixed, everybody going to the one school. Even in the South here, I don't really agree with this system of Gael schools and national schools. I think it should be all national schools. I don't see why we should divide the community by some people going to one type of school and one to another. And I think that is something that I would love the Department of Education to work on. And I really do, I do trust the Northern Ireland people. They're very good, hardworking people, and they will find a solution.
Yeah, thanks indeed for that, Grainne. This is the 9 till noon show on Highland Radio. It's the Friday panel on a Thursday with Donal, and we're joined on the panel by Grainne Hynes, a member of Letterkenny Active Retirement, Councillor Kieran Brogan, Letterkenny Milford, MD, Fianna Fáil representative, and Mary Hart, broadcaster and journalist. Just a couple of your comments before we go any further. What about the cervical check scandal and the overspend on the children's hospital that Simon Harris oversaw? Instead of giving him a pat on the back, we should be calling for a general election. The government's been nothing but a disaster for the Irish people, as was stated by Micheál Martin when he said the country wouldn't be best served by a Fianna Fáil, Fine Gael government. Then he did what every other politician does and went back on his word. Caller says, I said I'd never vote for Sinn Féin, but after seeing what's happening in the country since 2005, they'll have my vote. Fianna Fáil and Fine Gael are a joke. It's time people stood up against these two parties who aren't interested in anything outside Dublin. The caller said, I think it's probably to be expected that Mary Hart would say that the overwhelming rejection of both referenda wasn't a protest against the government. It's a prime example of how out of touch people are with the people of the country. I understood exactly what I was voting for, and I voted no. What about when Simon Harris was Minister for Health when the cervical cancer scandal hit? Another caller says the immigration policy doesn't make sense, in my opinion. People are coming here instead of to the likes of Spain or France because they get better money. Why can't we have border control like they have in Australia? And a number of people pointing out that it took 15 counts for Simon Harris to get in, and that means he should not be anywhere near the top job. Let's go back, and we're going to talk to another issue, really, which in a sense is an issue that Simon Harris is going to have to look at as the head of government, and it's the issue of the cost of living, and specifically the latest announcement that there is to be a rise in the price of a pint. Nationwide last year, 51 pubs closed their doors. Can anything be done to lighten the load? And it just so happens that last evening the Cabinet went another step towards introducing auto-enrolment for pensions. And indeed, restaurateurs, vintners and others are claiming that's going to be another nail in the coffin for many businesses in the service industry because of the extra cost it's going to impose. I'm going to go to you first, Councillor Kieran Brogan, both as a political representative and someone who has some experience of the service industry as well yourself. In terms of the latest rises, are they going to put licensed premises, restaurants and others under more pressure?
There's absolutely no doubt about that, Donald. It's been a very, very challenging time for business people over the course of the last 4 years. And I think that some people, the bigger companies, if you like, have seen this as an opportunity. I know a number of years ago, Heineken would have introduced, maybe last year, they introduced a price increase at the time, and Diageo came out and they said that they wouldn't be increasing their prices. But believe it or not, they've increased it twice since. And I think this is becoming a huge problem. I think there's a huge disconnect from the challenges, the reality of what's happening on the ground by some of the bigger companies. I mean, a recent figure that I heard recently that has become, in the last number of years, the cost of business has gone up 34%. I mean, you can put that down to energy prices, you can put it down to insurance, you can put it down to the increase in prices. And I think, to be honest, far too much control in the bigger companies are, I suppose, if you like, being taken by too few. But what is happening, you see it in supermarket business as well. And I think that that's not good, too much power and control. And I think, you know, with respect to the unfortunate situation, the war in Ukraine and stuff, we've seen that. But unfortunately, what has happened is I think some of the bigger companies are seeing this as an opportunity to increase their profits. And I think we need to look at the model of business because it's becoming very, very challenging. And I would call on the drinks companies to step back from the prices and indeed to maybe take a hit on the margin that they're getting and have been getting for some time and try and allow the smaller businesses to survive, because this is exactly going to take people away from the on-trade, and it's only promoting the off-trade, and it's going to put people into their houses and stuff. And we've seen a huge change in the trends. Indeed, the nightclubs are effectively, you know, really been struggling over the last number of years, as indeed has some of the rural pubs as well. But businesses across the board have become very challenged over the last number of years. And I think we need to look at the benefit of businesses in creating jobs, sustainable jobs, long-term jobs and opportunities for many people. And I think we need to try and work through that. But the big companies need to, maybe it's something that the Competition Authority needs to have a look at. I think for far too long, they have been looking closely at it because it's just not good enough to come along whenever you decide somebody at the very higher end decides to press a button that could make a huge difference to people's business and livelihood.
Mary Hart, from your point of view, you live in Rafow. It's a town that will depend a lot on tourism, will depend on visitors, and will depend on the services industry, licensed premises and so on. Something like this that puts licensed premises under pressure, that's not going to be good news for an area like Rafow that's so dependent on that sector.
I don't think, I wouldn't tend to agree that it would depend on that sector.
Would depend, perhaps, is the wrong word, but there would be a large proportion of custom.
Yeah, I mean, my view, and I, at the risk of sounding, old, I think it's a terrible state of affairs that we're vexed about a few pence being put on drink or alcohol. When we look at people in tents on the streets and people who are living in hotels who should have a home. The drinks industry and the publicans have had their day. They've had a great time in the past. Why we should be in a terrible situation that, oh, it's terrible, the pubs are closing. Why is that a terrible thing when our A&E at weekends are jam-packed with people who are out of their heads with alcohol? You take a trip down Letterkenny Main Street at midnight at a weekend, and it's scary, to say the least. The courts are filled with people who's wouldn't be there but for having consumed far too much alcohol. So I do think we need to seriously look at this attitude that we have, that Ireland is all about pubs and all about drinking Guinness and all about where the Irish, where the pubs are this part of our culture. They're not a part of our culture at all. I think personally, we should be looking at the much more serious issues within our communities at the moment, people who are on the breadline. Again, going back to, you know, we do have a good country, we do have a lot of money, and we do have a good solid base from which to work from. We're just not getting some of those things put together. And, you know, we need to build more houses. Absolutely, the government has, and local authorities. And I have to flag up one thing that it bothers me big time, is that for a year and a half, there's a housing estate sitting brand new in Rafow, empty. State-of-the-art housing. And I don't know what Donegal County Council are doing about that, but those houses have been fenced up for a year and a half. And I've not been able to get an answer to that. So, you know, it's for us to be talking about the price of a pint going up by a few pence, I think is a nonsense. That's my view.
That's fair enough. I'm not sure the pubs that are closing are the pubs that are causing the problems in terms of the courts and the A&E and so on and so forth. Gráinne Hines, have you a perspective on this?
Yes, I do indeed. I agree with everything Mary has said. I really feel there are far too many pubs for a start. And I know in the olden days, one pub educated a whole family. The family worked in it and they did very well. As Mary said, they had a great run at it. And Diageo and Heineken, are there not other, you could educate me, Karen, are there other companies that produce drinks that perhaps you could switch your business to? I don't know. And I think putting it up by 9 cents is not okay. That does that mean the publicans put it up by double that? So therefore they never take a hit. So the companies don't take a hit. The publicans aren't taking a hit. The only people who are taking a hit are the punters. And I just don't think it's that important. I am horrified at the amount of drink that young people consume and their the way they behave when they've consumed the drink. And I think this idea of pubs being our culture is crazy. I don't agree with that either. I am absolutely horrified at the idea of nightclubs working till 6 a.m. in the morning, the problems that it'll cause, the staff that have to go there and work over that, which is not healthy to work overnight if you can avoid it. I know nurses and other people have to do it. But the aggressiveness that comes from certain times after 2 o'clock in the morning is amazing. And it's really not a good model for our children to be thinking that pubs are more important than housing or homeless people. Let's concentrate on that. When you're in a business, you have to take the hits. If I'm working, say I'm working privately and I lose my customers, I have to take that hit. Why should they be supported more than normal people who are trying to struggle with the low wages? I know that pubs and restaurant businesses didn't pay their people properly for many years, and the rise in the minimum wage and the fact that they have to pay now for their pensions, etc., is obviously hitting them big. I know it's a big thing for them, but it is the right thing to be done, and I really don't have much sympathy for them.
The government is being called on to consider lowering the national voting age to 16. Now, the National Youth Parliament for 12 to 18-year-olds, Dáil na n-Óg, took place in Leinster House this week. And I'm going to ask our panel if they would agree that we should effectively be lowering the voting age. I'm going to go to you first, if I may, Grainne. Do you think 16-year-olds should be voting?
No, I don't, actually. I have dealt with teenagers a lot in my career. And I actually rang my granddaughter last night. She's 20. And I got her opinion on it, and she said that they have discussed it in their group, and they don't think it's right. They don't think that when they think what they were like at 16, and she said to me, there's no way we would have the knowledge or even the interest. And you're all at that age, you're concentrating on your studies, on your career, what you're going to do, your leaving cert, your subjects, et cetera, et cetera. Your hormones are raging. And it isn't a great time for people to have a level head. And you're very idealistic. You take up the weirdest. I know myself at 16, I had the weirdest ideas.
But then again, by the same token, and I've done a little bit of work over the years with Donegal Youth Council, and we have a young person's panel that comes in here from time to time. I'm sure you've heard them. There's a lot of them are very articulate. They're very interesting. Mm-hmm. They've got something to say. And their argument to you would be, we're a part of this society. We have a voice and we want to use it.
Well, there is a theory that people's brains don't really develop fully till they're 25, particularly males. And therefore, you are making ideas on a kind of a wonky basis. So, no, I don't think so. And I think it's putting a burden on them and introducing them to problems and things that they let them enjoy their teenage years, let them develop, have their weird ideas, dress weirdly, do what they want to do. And let them have their ideas. And it's good for them to have panels and youth councils so they can give, you know, like gather up and chat about things and submit ideas and all that. But as for them to vote, no, I don't think so. And I think a lot of them, also at that age, you're very much influenced by your parents. You haven't really developed your full personality. Mm-hmm. And if your parents are this, that or the other, the pressure will be put on you to vote.
I have to be honest, I mean, when I was 16, if my parents told me to go left, I'd have gone right. If my parents told me to go right, I'd have gone left. If my parents said yellow, I'd have gone green. Just on the principle, the last thing I would have done at 16
well, again,
was what my parents told
either,
me to
course.
Do.
That is not a good thing either. So you have a kind of a weird, it's a weird time for children, and leave them alone, let them grow up.
Kieran Brogan.
Let's not worry too much about politics and what the country are doing.
Councillor Kieran Brogan, I referenced Donegal Youth Council. You have regular meetings with them. You see them regularly. Voting at 16, good or bad?
Yeah, I think it's good. Something I would fully support personally. I have a daughter. My daughter is coming 16 now, Malaysia, and Oren was just 18 on Sunday. And, you know, the one thing I'll say of the young people of today, I think they're very, very bright and intelligent. They have a mind of their own as well. I think that's all changed. I think the education system we have is one of the best in the world. And I think we should be listening, engaging more with the young people. And the engagement that I have with them, to be honest, they're a breath of fresh air. They're really good. And I think we need to take them on board. So I would fully support giving them a vote. At 16 years of age, because look, they're the future and we need to let them at it.
Mary Hart, I'm going to give the final word on this one to yourself. Voting at 16, you obviously would have had a lot of political knowledge and involvement at 16, given the household you grew up in. Do you believe you should have had a vote at that point? Sorry, Mary, we can't actually hear you.
Sorry,
we got you.
Sorry. Lovely. I would have been the one that would have challenged my father a lot when I was 16. I'm with Grainne on this one, and I was a former teacher, and I had teenagers myself, and I taught teenagers, and they are idealistic, but they're not all idealistic. We do get the nice idealistic ones on the panels and on the, you know, being part of party groups and all that. I do think they're far too young. They cannot possibly understand the economics, the macro and microeconomics of political parties presenting you with. I just find that it's just too young. It's just too young. And, you know, I remember as I think all of us would when 21 was the age that you voted at. So, you know, 18, I think, is just about right and idealistic and very bright young people, but not all of them are capable of making a good valued choice when it comes to politics. They might be good at everything else, but certainly I don't think it's the right thing and the right choice.
And that brings our Thursday panel to an end. Broadcaster and journalist Mary Hart, Councillor Kieran Brogan, and active retirement member and campaigner Grainne Hynes. All of you, thank you very much indeed for your perspectives. Enjoyed that chat. I always say when I do this show, usually on a Friday, but the panel is the fastest hour of the week, and it's been an absolute pleasure. To all of you, thank you very much indeed. We're going to go for a break before the news and obituary notices, but before we do go for a break, I want to just let you know that if you have a ticket for our €10,000 home makeover draw, stand by, because we're going to have a draw later on in the programme. There's an extra €5,000 in cash to be given away. It's going to be given away in two tranches of €2,500. It's going to happen today, and it's going to happen next week. At 11:15 this morning, lines will close. At 11:30, we'll be making a call, and somebody will be winning €2,500. So if you haven't got a ticket already, you can get a ticket now by contacting us on 074-9125000. You can get it online on highlandradio.com. And if you do that before 11:15 this morning, which means you have about an hour and 15 minutes, if you do it before 11:15, you will be in the draw, and you could be €2,500 richer by 11:30 this morning. There'll be another chance Friday of next week to win €2,500. And then later on, you will have the chance to win that €10,000 home makeover. That's courtesy of Foy's in Foy and Company. They are Foy's of Ballybofey, aren't they? Yeah, I think they're in Ballybofey. They have a place in Letterkenny as well. And if I'm wrong, I do thoroughly apologise for that. That's the home makeover draw that is available, and that's what's happening at the moment. So, you can get in touch either on highlandradio.com, or you can contact us at Highland Radio over the phone 074 9125000.